When someone has osteoporosis, they're thinking of balance in terms of their physical balance. But really, it's this deep biochemical balance that is really critical. And you're really pointing here that in order to maintain that balance, we have building blocks or we have cofactors, that being the micronutrients and minerals that we're maybe not paying enough attention to. And we need them to maintain that internal balance.
Right. Yeah. And that's exactly what it is. That's our entire health, right? It's homeostasis. It's that balance between not being or being. And so if we look at every part of our body, we need some form of balance. And that is through and through. Like, homeostasis is there because that is how we regulate. That's how our body regulates. And so that's going to apply to bones. It's going to apply to all the organs, gut bacteria, everything.
Welcome to Stronger Bones Lifestyle Podcast. I am Debbie Robinson, your host and guide on your Stronger Bones Lifestyle journey.
My next guest is Dr. Barbara Woger. She is a licensed naturopathic doctor practicing in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Dr. Barb is passionate about empowering individuals to take control of their own health. Her primary focus is to explore the underlying root causes and provide individualized patient-centered care. She utilizes evidence-based therapies and provides patients with the knowledge and tools needed to succeed. Her clinical focus is in women's health, stress management, and inflammatory conditions. Dr. Barb spends a great deal of time educating individuals on the importance of magnesium and why we need to add this mineral to our health toolbox. When she's not seeing patients, she loves spending time in nature, reading, and experimenting with new recipes in the kitchen. Welcome, Dr. Barb. Welcome, Barbara.
Hi, how are you?
Nice to have you on Stronger Bones Lifestyle Podcast. And I am so intrigued to learn from you today about magnesium.
I am so excited to be here. So thank you for inviting me. And one of my most favorite things to talk about is magnesium and what it can do for us, our health, and all of the, you know, things that people don't think about that this one mineral actually does and why it's so important to have in our toolbox at any age and stage of our life.
Yeah. So I think people, you know, we hear about vitamins and minerals. As a bone health specialist, I say that there's four musketeers of bone health: vitamin D, calcium, magnesium, and vitamin K. So right. The minerals, if you could explain a little bit about the minerals, why they're important, and then what you have come to learn over the years working with the patients that you work with.
Right. So minerals are often, if I'm just speaking about a group of minerals are often, they're necessary for the proper functioning of things in our body. And we don't need, you know, as much of each mineral as we would with, let's say, magnesium. Obviously, if we're looking at zinc or something like that, we're not going to use as much. So there's different amounts that we need of each of these micronutrients. But these minerals basically function or allow the body to function properly. Like, that is basically their overall structure and what their job is. Now, mind you, certain minerals have certain jobs to do. And when we look at magnesium, we have to look at the wide range of important duties that this mineral has. So when we look at magnesium, it's the fourth most abundant mineral in the body. So it's huge, right? And again, it's necessary for our proper functioning of the body, and it's involved in somewhere around 700 enzymatic reactions. So what that means is that it has its hands in a lot of different processes in order for those processes to actually happen. So a lot of things in our body, if we look at it from a biochemical sense, need enzymes or some form of material, nutrient, mineral, whatever you want to call it, to actually go through different cycles, different pathways. And if we don't have those enzymes or those nutrients, then that shuts down, or that process just won't run as efficiently as if we did have all the components there. So when we look at 700 enzymatic reactions, this is huge. Like, there's no other mineral that actually has to do this much work. And when we just dumb it really down, every cell in our body contains magnesium and needs it to function. So that's how important it is. And it's why there's so much magnesium deficiency out there and why it's implicated in dozens of different health conditions. And unfortunately, these health conditions are very broad. So oftentimes there are many other solutions looked at ahead of, hey, let's just look at it simply here and let's see what has to happen in order for this reaction to happen, but it doesn't actually get the same attention. And so my passion is creating awareness and knowledge around the important role that this mineral plays in our body. And there's so much research behind it. Like there's 12,000 plus publications in PubMed. So it's not like, you know, there's no research been done on this mineral. It's not like this mineral hasn't had its time in the spotlight. It's just that it doesn't get thought of very often. And we overlook this mineral completely. And we kind of refer to it as, oh yeah, it's great for sleep and it helps us with stress and we're good. And unfortunately, it's just so much more than that. And so that's why my passion is to really get it out there and make people aware of what this mineral actually does for our bodies.
Yeah, I think that the way that I look at this, it's foundational. So it's like light switches in your house can't turn on unless you go over to the switch and you click it up. And the minerals are cofactors. They're necessary ingredients for activating vitamins. They're also involved in processes. So at the very basic, they're like the basic needs. And I always say things like this to, you know, to put it in layperson's terms, that if you're going to bake a cake, you need certain ingredients. The eggs are what makes the cake rise. You need the flour to hold it together to give it structure. You need the sugar to make it palatable. And the baking soda has a reaction as well. And our minerals actually are like that in our body. And so, you know, we say, we know or we hear that we need to take a vitamin or a mineral, but we don't actually realize that they're integral for your body to function, for your heart to beat, your muscles to contract, your bones to be strong, all of the things, cellular energy production. And so that's what I think, that if people really understood the why behind why do we need them, and then when you look at this mineral being the fourth most important and involved in that many processes, then you can start to see how that lack or deficiency is really behind a lot of what we experience symptomatically.
Right. And the problem here too is that our society tends to focus heavily on macronutrients, right? And so we look at the protein and the carbohydrates and the fats, and we kind of put those ahead of everything else. And they're important. Don't get me wrong. They are very important and they serve purposes, but it tends to not allow us to kind of look at the micronutrients. So, you know, they're not often speaking about a micronutrient in isolation, or, you know, that it is a cofactor, or that it is necessary to kind of turn that lock, right? That's what minerals do, but they don't get that attention. And so, you know, I think even through this last pandemic that we've had, we were also very heavily looked at vitamin D and zinc for those very important reasons, because zinc and the immune system and vitamin D in the immune system. And so that is something that started to come to more people's attention. So now more people are more familiar with zinc and vitamin D than they were even prior, but that's because the emphasis was put on those. And so oftentimes we don't look at the smaller capacities of micronutrients and what they do. And so we often, they just get overlooked. And, you know, we hear the common, you know, vitamin C's and D's and calcium, and that's pretty much all that we hear. And so people don't have that education or that knowledge or even the awareness of it.
Yeah. Okay. So this brings me to symptom management. And that's what we're trying to do, right? So we're actually behind the eight ball. We're at the symptom place where, oh, now we have a pandemic. So the immune systems are struggling. We need more zinc. We need more vitamin D. So we wait until the symptom comes up, and then we try to manage the symptom. And it's kind of, you know, with conventional medicine, everything's about a medication. You know, here's the Band-Aid solution for this issue. And then sometimes we look at supplementation the same way, where it's like, let's manage this symptom. But really, it's more about foundation. And I think that that's what you're really raising awareness to is, and you know, the work that you do as a naturopathic doctor, I do that as a functional health coach. I run functional labs looking at minerals. And I specialize in bone health where minerals, the bones are storing minerals. It's really looking at the foundational aspect. And so I think that that passion that you have is raising awareness, because I see you on Instagram. And what is your handle on Instagram?
It's just my name, Dr. Barb Woger.
Okay, Dr. Barb Woger. You put out some amazing information quite often with evidence-based research for that. And you're really raising awareness. So it's not just, oh, you can't sleep, take magnesium. Oh, you can't do this, take magnesium. I'd love for you to talk about the forms of magnesium. I'd love for you to talk about what they, you know, why it matters to take one versus the other. And then, of course, we know that there's one out there that's the most common and it can have some effects on bowel movements, right? So this foundational aspect, because if you really lay down the why, I find if we lay down the why do we need this mineral? You know, yeah, 700, but let's talk about women that are aging, bone health, hormone development, and how it plays a role in healthy and happy aging.
Right. And if we look at, okay, so just when we look at where magnesium is stored in the body, right? And one of the most abundant places is in the bones, right? So we know that magnesium, 50 to 60% of the body's magnesium is actually stored in the bones. And then the rest is in the soft tissues. And then less than 1% is actually in the blood serum. So, which brings up a very important point just before I go on. Most patients will come in and be like, well, my doctor tested magnesium and it's fine. And unfortunately, that isn't telling us a lot of information, because the serum blood test that they run is actually only looking at that less than 1% that is in the blood serum. And our bodies keep tight control on that less than 1%. So that number is very rarely ever outside of the range. It's usually right in the middle or towards the higher end. And, you know, people see that and they're like, oh, well, my magnesium is great. And it's actually, in fact, not, because we haven't looked at 99% of the rest of the magnesium in the body. So doing a blood serum, simple blood serum magnesium test often doesn't give us the information that we really need. Not that there is a very, I don't think there's a, like a very 100% test out there that can tell us, because there just isn't. I tend to use red blood cell magnesium at times for blood work. And I tend to want to be, or have that patient be, in the very high end of that range. And because I've seen them at the bottom end and they're still deficient. And so we look at usually doing high end, and that is a little bit more of a sensitive marker. And so we see deficiencies with that marker. We see that people are on the lower side. So that is just something that we need to kind of keep in mind. So if we have 50 to 60% of magnesium in the bones, then we know that magnesium actually helps with bone health. And so when we're looking at bone health, we know that it increases calcium absorption, right? So it helps to regulate the calcium transport and the absorption in the body. And that means that when magnesium levels are adequate, the body is going to be better able to absorb and use the calcium to build and maintain strong bones, which is really essential. We also know that magnesium helps to stimulate bone-forming cells. And so it's involved in the activation of osteoblasts. And osteoblasts are the cells responsible for that bone formation. And when we see sufficient levels, we're better able to build and maintain bone mass, which is really important. We also know that magnesium helps to decrease the bone breakdown. So this is the osteoclasts. And that when magnesium levels are low, we see more osteoclast activity and, of course, bone loss. So that's a really important fact as well. And then magnesium supports vitamin D metabolism, and vitamin D, as we know, is really important for bone health. It helps to absorb calcium, and it's involved in magnesium is involved in the absorption and the activation of vitamin D. So we need adequate magnesium levels if we want to have optimal vitamin D function. You can take all the vitamin D you want. It can be in an active form, but if you don't have enough magnesium stores or your levels of magnesium are not high enough that you can activate the vitamin D in the liver and the kidneys, then all that vitamin D you're taking is really not doing much for your body because you can't do anything with it unless you activate it. And I often see the people who are vitamin D deficient are magnesium deficient. If I run the same RBC blood test, their numbers are very low. And so that is a key. Now, there's a very sensitive balance because if you high dose vitamin D, you can also induce a magnesium deficiency. And it's because of that calcium absorption. So we don't want to high dose vitamin D unless there's a really good reason because it actually induces the magnesium deficiency. And if we have the magnesium deficiency, we're not actually activating that high dose vitamin D in the body. So it's not doing anything or it's not producing a result. So that becomes really important as well. And then of course, we know magnesium reduces inflammation and we know that chronic low-grade inflammation contributes to bone loss, often contributes to osteoporosis, and magnesium has that anti-inflammatory property, which can help to reduce that inflammation and protect bone health overall. So it plays a big role in bone health, even though this is not a common thing that is out there about magnesium and bone health. When I hear bone health stuff, especially in the news or from other patients, I hear calcium, and I might hear vitamin D from here and there. So it doesn't get a lot of attention, but yet it does a lot of things in order to support good, healthy bone health.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping, honestly, that's one of the main, that's a big reason why I wanted to have you on here too, because the more this gets out there, that is really important. When women come to me, they're sometimes on a whole bunch of supplements. The main supplements women are on is calcium and vitamin D, because it seems like doctors are trying to prescribe medications. A lot of women these days, like a lot of the medications are really not reaching the goal that they intended in the first place. There's a lot of negative side effects. Women are getting much more savvy about medications and not wanting to take them, or especially the women that I see. And so they are prescribed or told by their physicians to take calcium and vitamin D. And I do see them on really high doses of vitamin D and still with low blood levels of vitamin D. And then the lower the blood level goes, the solution is typically more vitamin D. I mean, sometimes 50,000 IUs, which is crazy. So what I don't see them on are the other two musketeers, the magnesium and the vitamin K. So this is really interesting what you're bringing up here, this relationship and this dance that's taking place. And, thinking that they're doing themselves a service by supporting immune function and vitamin D to absorb calcium. But it, because of the synergistic aspect of all of this, it's like an orchestra and you can't just have one or two players. And if one player is missing, or if a whole section is missing, let's say a whole section, if you don't have the strings, that melodic emotional component that strings bring to an orchestra. So this really is like this. We need that harmony. So could you speak just a little bit more about that? Women that are taking high dose of vitamin D.
So before I go into that, see, this is the other issue that we have to be concerned with. So many of the menopausal women, even perimenopausal women that I see, they come in, you're right, with vitamin D and or calcium. And the problem with that is as well, is that when we're taking calcium without sufficient magnesium, so magnesium and calcium have a marriage and vitamin D and magnesium have a marriage. And so when we start taking lots of calcium and we don't have enough magnesium in the system, we cannot break that calcium down. It's magnesium's job to break down calcium. So if you are sending women out with vitamin D and calcium thinking, okay, this is good for their bone health, which, that's what the society is led to believe, you are doing a disservice because A, you're bringing in more calcium into the system. Well, what does calcium do? It it builds things. It's like a calcification, right? So it can produce stones. It can produce bone spurs. It can produce like little tiny, what do you call them?
I call them cobwebs. The adhesions.
Yeah, like in the art. Yeah. Yeah. And it's in the joints and in some of the arteries, right? Like these are all formed by calcium. And so when we're sending women out with calcium and vitamin D, that's what we're doing because we have nothing to kind of metabolize or break that calcium down. And I'm even really reluctant to sometimes prescribe more calcium because we actually get a lot of calcium from our foods and we don't even need to be eating dairy. So like my patients that are dairy free are still getting the calcium that they need. And I really reserve calcium for people who are in that osteoporosis state or maybe osteopenia, and we want to try to reverse some of that. But if that isn't going on, I'm even reluctant not to do calcium, and I do vitamin D, K2, and magnesium because I know that magnesium and K2 have a very similar function in that they direct the calcium to the bones, not the arteries or joints or any other deposits, kidney stones, stuff like that. So K2 does that as well and helps to absorb that calcium, which is great. And then magnesium helps to activate vitamin D. And if that person is on a calcium supplement, it helps to break down that calcium. You can't break that calcium down if you don't have magnesium. That's it. Like, and this is a big problem because this is what most people are coming in with is these two types of supplements.
Yeah. I always say it's like bones and teeth and pearls are made out of calcium. And that's like a hard substance. You don't want that in your soft blood vessels around your heart, even in your joints. And so, what do you do for testing, for mineral testing to determine?
Sometimes I'll do like a mineral panel. We have panels here that we can run. We can also run, I do run RBC. I do run vitamin D. Sometimes I will run the mineral panel for the calcium, but
serum. It's all serum.
Serum.
Do you ever do hair mineral testing?
I do, but I've had some inconsistent results with hair testing, and that's going to depend on whether or not they've used some type of, you know, color or whatever. And I know you're supposed to get the very bottom and we've tried that. And sometimes we've gotten inconsistent results, but if we're really at a loss, I will use it because at least it gives us a baseline or some type of an idea. But
yeah, I use it for that too. And I do try to take into account, are they using hard water? You know, there's some things. And then if you see like high zinc or something, maybe there's a shampoo or a cream or something, but I don't like to give calcium supplementation without that. Because unless I have something to look at, and I find often I find both. I find extremes. I very rarely find a really great level. I either find really low minerals, and then we're going to need that supplementation, or I find high levels, and we know that there's that calcification in the body. So we don't want bones growing outside of our bones.
Right. I don't know what the guidelines are where you are, but here at age 50, most women as preventative do bone density tests. So we usually use that. If they've got good bone density, I'm not putting in a calcium because there's no reason for me to do that, especially if I can get them getting the calcium from their diet, which many women can. We just don't think certain foods have calcium. And that is like, I try to stay away from the calcium, especially in the perimenopause, menopause age, because of that factor. And I just want to make sure that A, their bone density is good, and their bone density looks at, you know, what type of function their bones are in. And it's a complete body thing. And if I see a bone density test that is well done and there's no issue there, then I don't go the calcium route, but I do the vitamin D, I do K2, and I do magnesium.
Yeah, we need to raise this awareness because everyone is, you know, we're not going to do meds, but they're doing calcium and vitamin D, and it's not just calcium and vitamin D. So with magnesium, can we talk about a little bit? There are 7 forms, right, of magnesium, and that matters, right? Because they have a function.
Right. So when the magnesium forms are, so I don't know how available they are, like they can be done separately. They can also be in a formula. Up here, we have some that are very available and some that are really hard to get. And most times they're only available through practitioners like naturopathic doctors or functional medicine doctors and stuff like that. But I'd say the most common ones that I use quite commonly and that we see out and about in the shelves in health food stores and stuff are magnesium bisglycinate is going to be probably right at the top. It is the, I like to call it the owl around formula of magnesium. It kind of touches on everything. It's very absorbable. It's easy to digest, like it's well tolerated. People don't actually need stomach acid because of the glycine molecule. So people who have nutrient absorption issues, gastrointestinal issues where they can't absorb things, bisglycinate is the way to go. It's easy for them to get that. And it's also, you know, pretty much available here. Also goes by the name of glycinate and bisglycinate. So whichever is available in your area, it's the same product, but it's a really good product. It also comes with like glycine, which is very calming, relaxing, and it's great for sleep. It's great for mood. It's great for, it's probably not so great for digestive function as far as like constipation and, you know, reflux and stuff like that. But it touches on the important aspects. And if we want to look at just doing it with a vitamin D, it's a perfect combo. So that is one source. The next one would be citrate. Citrate is very popular here as well. It used to be like the bisglycinate, but it kind of got bumped down once bisglycinate came onto the scene. And bisglycinate is actually four times, it's got more absorbability and capacity than citrate. So citrate is very specific. It's kind of a osmotic laxative, right? So it brings water into the colon and it allows for better bowel movements, regular bowel movements. I use it in constipation cases. I use it in reflux cases, those types of things, migraines. You have to kind of work your way up with citrate though, because you can get loose stool if you start too high too quickly. So you want to titrate to make sure that your body becomes used to it, but it usually doesn't need a lot. You can usually go within that recommended dietary allowance with citrate and still get the benefit. So that is another good one that I use a lot with like my constipation patients and reflux and upper GI issues.
Wait, and then can I ask you a question about that? Yeah. Because a lot of my population, I have a program called Healthy Gut, Healthy Bones, and a lot of digestive issues. And, you know, just the actual act of aging in and of itself Yes. can affect digestion. So for those that are constipated, that then is a safe form of magnesium to use the citrate. And is there a dosing? I mean, I had always heard 150 milligrams per 50 pounds of body weight. Does that sound like a good amount or on a higher end?
Well, it definitely depends on how bad the constipation is. Normally, if you do somewhere between 300 and 400 milligrams, we can get pretty good results where it's kind of a play, but where we don't have like diarrhea, loose bowels, and we have regular bowel movements and they're still formed kind of thing. So
Goldilocks, we're looking for the Goldilocks poop.
Yeah.
And that's also going to be supportive of bone health. So
Cause there's still like what happens with all these different forms is that they're being attached to a molecule that's helping to get that magnesium into the cell. There's no such thing as just taking magnesium, unless you're eating it through food. And even through food, we're not getting all of that magnesium that we're getting because it's coming in with other nutrients and other, you know, vitamins and minerals. And so that is helping it get into the cell. So when you're taking a supplement, the reason you see citrate, malate, orotate, bisglycinate, all of these things is because they're attaching it to that molecule to enhance the absorption of getting that magnesium into the cell and doing what it needs to do. So all of your magnesiums will do that overall kind of umbrella benefit, but the molecule that they add on can be very specific for certain conditions. So citrate is very specific for constipation or people who have trouble having, you know, that Goldilocks kind of bowel movement. And so that is a good way of kind of using that. That's not a traditional laxative, right? Because the traditional laxatives that can sometimes slow down motility even more because we're our bowels don't really have to do anything. This laxative comes in and the laxative takes over and it stimulates the muscles and off we go. And it's okay to do that once in a while, but if you're on chronic laxatives, then we're going to have a problem when we want to try to have our own bowel movements without them. So the citrate is not something that is habit forming. Like a lot of people worry, oh, if I take this all the time, then I'm not going to be able to have bowel movements. And that's really not the case. Yeah.
Okay. So that was interesting. I just learned something. I knew there were seven forms, but I didn't realize it's all magnesium. It's just in a supplement form, they put a delivery system with it, depending on where we want it to go and what we want it to do. So that's very fascinating. And you're saying that the most general would be either, I also it was a glycinate and biglycinate, but glycinate, however you want to say it. So glycinate, biglycinate, and then you would use citrate, which would help with constipation. And then for bones in particular, would you say that glycinate or biglycinate are the best forms?
Use the bisglycinate or the glycinate. Yeah. Okay. And especially if somebody has a GI issue already, where I know that, you know, they might have gas or bloating, they might have some gut lining disruption, I'm going to tend to stick with the bisglycinate, because if they take another form of magnesium, they may not absorb that, because again, we need to make sure that they're absorbing it in order for it to actually do what it needs to do. And so bisglycinate doesn't use our stomach acid. So somebody who has, you know, reflux or somebody who has gastritis, they're going to be much harder pressed to absorb some of those nutrients coming in, or celiac or Crohn's or IBD, like the inflammatory bowel diseases, they're not absorbing the same way as somebody who doesn't have that. And so bisglycinate becomes like really important, because they can actually still absorb that magnesium despite their absorption being a little bit impaired.
Yeah, that's amazing, because I find a lot of gut dysbiosis and gut issues. What about with SIBO? Would that also apply for SIBO?
Yeah, because SIBO is, again, it's a disruption of the gut microbiome, right? So it could be you have too many good bacteria or too many bad bacteria, right? So it's not always the bad bacteria. And, you know, personally, for me, SIBO is basically a gut dysbiosis. You've got an imbalance in bacteria, right? I mean, yes, they might have translocated, but it's the bacteria that are imbalanced. So you either have too many good bacteria in the wrong area, or you have too many bad, or you have this imbalance between the two that are causing the symptoms of SIBO, which are often like the gas, the bloating. Some people will have diarrhea, stuff like that.
Yeah, interesting. I just recently was listening about Akkermansia, one of the commensal or good gut bacteria. However, when it's overgrown, it's mucus degrading, and it degrades the mucus layer and the lining. So it really is about balance. And I, you know, when someone has osteoporosis, they're thinking of balance in terms of their physical balance, but really it's this deep biochemical balance that is really critical. And you're really pointing here that in order to maintain that balance, we have building blocks, or we have cofactors, that being the micronutrients and minerals that we're maybe not paying enough attention to. And we need them to maintain that internal balance.
Right. Yeah. And that's exactly what it is. That's our entire health, right? It's homeostasis. It's that balance between, you know, not being or being. And so if we look at every part of our body, we need some form of balance. And that is through and through. Like homeostasis is there because that is how we regulate. That's how our body regulates. And so that's going to apply to bones. It's going to apply to all the organs, gut bacteria, everything, right? So, yeah.
Yeah. So you spoke about the supplements and the delivery system that's put on them with supplements. What about food? Because food, magnesium then is in its most perfect form. So what are some of the food recommendations that maybe have a better bioavailability than some of the other foods, if that's part of what happens?
That's going to depend upon that individual. So obviously, magnesium-rich foods include a lot of leafy greens, seeds, nuts, salmon is part of the fish family, avocados, bananas, like those types of foods are very high. It's hard to get the amount of magnesium we need from the food we eat for a few reasons. Number one, our soils are not what they used to be. So due to our farming practices and the way that things are farmed, we don't actually produce as much nutrition in that plant or in that food as we used to. So we do see those numbers are lower. The other thing is we deplete our magnesium quite quickly. And so when you look at what depletes magnesium, if you have a lot of those things that are going on in your life, you're going to be always trying to, you're always going to be behind the eight ball trying to get enough nutrition in to supplement your magnesium levels. And it's not that I don't believe nutrition is important. It's totally important. And I always say to my patients, by eating the magnesium-rich foods, this is giving us the added addition, but it's very hard to get enough magnesium from our food to actually be transported because you need to have a good digestive system to actually absorb those nutrients coming in from food. We know most people have some gut issue going on. This is very, very common. So if you're eating 300 milligrams of magnesium, you might actually only be absorbing 150. But if you're depleting magnesium because you're stressed and your insulin isn't in par and you're having alcohol and you're eating sugar and you're working out, these all deplete magnesium. And so now you end up having this 150 milligrams that comes in from food. And it's just not enough. And so you are in this deficient state. And this is why we have such a big magnesium deficiency. This is why 70% of our population is deficient, is because we don't look at what depletes magnesium. And we don't. So when I see a patient and I see, okay, they have five of these that are depleting magnesium, I have to dose higher with them. Sure, I'm going to include food because I love food. I think food's a great thing. I just don't think it can be done on its own. And so I have to look at that and then I dose accordingly based upon what's depleting their magnesium.
Yeah, that's really true. So let's go over those depletion aspects again, because I thought that was really important. So right. Do you have like a list of 10 things or?
The biggest ones are obviously stress, right? So there's this, what I call a vicious circle. So magnesium really helps reduce our stress response. But when we're stressed, we go through our magnesium stores because it uses up magnesium. So if you're stressed, you're going to deplete magnesium. If you have an insulin resistance issue or you don't have good control of insulin and glucose, blood glucose, that takes up magnesium because we are actually through the kidney depleting magnesium if we are insulin resistant. And this is like 12% of Americans are metabolically healthy or 11%. And now I think it's closer down to 5%. So that's a problem with a big part of our population. And so that's going to deplete magnesium. Alcohol is a diuretic. We know magnesium is an electrolyte. It's going to be depleted by that. If we work out and we sweat, that's an electrolyte. It's gone. You're losing magnesium. If you have sugar, you will deplete your magnesium. It takes 54 molecules approximately of magnesium to process one molecule of sugar.
Wow.
That's a biochemical reaction. And if you love sugar, guess what? You're going to be blowing through magnesium like crazy because it takes so much. We know fluoride competes with magnesium and loses. It depletes our magnesium. So if we're using fluoride toothpaste and we're having fluoride in our water and, you know, up here in the cities and like we have fluoride in our water, like unless you, you know, use a water filtration system, you're going to be consuming that fluoride. So that reduces it. Medications, PPIs, statins, antibiotics, birth control pills. These are all depletions of magnesium, huge depletions. If I have a patient that comes in on any of these medications, their need for magnesium is right away way higher than anybody else's need that doesn't have these medications. And especially like, I don't know about you, but up here, statins and PPIs are given out like candy. Like yeah. it's every single person, you know, that is getting these diuretics for blood pressure. These are magnesium containing or draining medications. So those are kind of like the, and of course then our food, right? So our food isn't what it used to be. So we of course then don't absorb all of our nutrients, and then that doesn't give us the adequate. So, but those are the big magnesium depletions. So when I see a patient, I have to look at all of these things. Am I going to, if you had every one of these, I would definitely not be recommending just nutrition, because you're not going to get enough and you will be deficient. And this is where I think not enough awareness is created around magnesium deficiency, because if we understand where we lose magnesium, then we'll be better, in a better spot to say, okay, let's not just supplement the RDA, which is quite low. It's 310 to 420 milligrams, depending upon female, male, and pregnancy or not pregnancy. You know, if we supplement only to the RDA, we're still not getting enough magnesium if you've got some of these deficiencies coming in. And so the RDA is a minimum of what is required to make the body at least work on a bare minimal kind of function. But you could be still be very deficient if you had some of these triggers that were coming in depleting your magnesium.
Now, what about absorbability of magnesium, and how much should you take per dose if you're using a supplement? Like, can you absorb? Isn't there a certain amount you can absorb at one time? And also the synergistic aspect of other supplements that can maybe inhibit absorption. Does that play a role here as well?
A little bit. We know that because magnesium is already bound to a nutrient or a molecule, we know that the magnesium can get into the cell much easier because of that. But, you know, if we're looking at certain things like ADHD, or we want something where hyperactivity, then B6 and magnesium coming in together are going to be very good. Anything that's cramping, that is tense, B6 and magnesium will be synergistic together. Magnesium and vitamin C sometimes are really good, and they enhance the absorption. But as far as how much magnesium in a capsule, you really don't want to see more than 200 milligrams, because then you know they're putting something else in there, because elemental magnesium, it's a big molecule. And it's why a lot of the times when you see formulas, they will put in a little bit of oxide, because oxide is a very small compound. And so they can get in more elemental magnesium when they bring in oxide. So they almost use it as a buffer to increase like the consumption of that magnesium in the tablet. But most companies, reputable companies, you won't see more than 200 milligrams. Usually it's around 100, 150. Some of the more professional lines will have the 200, but you really shouldn't be seeing more than that in one capsule.
Well, could somebody take 600 milligrams at once? Would that be absorbed?
Yeah, it would. Would you reabsorb all of it? Probably not, because the body's going to break it down, right? Just like anything else. It's like as if you were taking 600 milligrams of vitamin C, you're not going to absorb all of it. Your body has to produce some part of that as waste. And so will you absorb all of it? Probably not, but you would absorb the majority of it. I always recommend dosing throughout the day, just because we have different things. So if you work out at night, right, like you might need more, like you might need something at that time instead of dosing everything in the morning. And then you have to be careful with medications, because magnesium and medications, some of them have the same pathway, and unfortunately medications are going to win, right? So they win that race. So making sure that you're not dosing certain medications with magnesium is really, really important, especially if you want that magnesium to actually be doing something.
Yeah, I heard something one time about seizure medication. Someone was having seizures at night and they were taking their supplements with their seizure meds. Now, this wasn't magnesium. I think it was vitamin C that got in the way of this pathway. So it really is, we take supplements, they're really powerful and valuable. Yet what you're saying is that whole pathway is overtaken by the medication. So yeah.
Right. And that's why it's important to always like work with like a healthcare provider, right? Like you don't want to be taking supplements and then impacting your medication that you need in order to whatever that medication is doing. Another common one is Synthroid, you know, for thyroid. You can't take magnesium around Synthroid. It's not a good thing. And so you want to make sure that what you're taking is effective and safe for your health condition and health history. And it's so, so, so important because, you know, these pathways, they, like you said, they're strong and they're powerful and they can change things. And, you know, a lot of people don't think that supplements interfere, but they do. And, you know, if you're taking something like Synthroid is, you deplete the efficacy and the actual strength of the Synthroid because it's competing, right? I mean, the Synthroid will win at the end, but it's still competing. So it's taking away some of that dosage from the Synthroid. And so you're not getting what you should be getting. And that's not good either, right? So it's important to, you know, make sure that, you know, what you're taking is in line with the medications that you're taking. Yeah.
Which is why it's important to go to someone that this is their life's work and that we spend time to learn these things so that it's not just, you know, trying to figure it out yourself. And that's what I find. And then there's also the issue of expensive urine where you're taking things that are not being utilized or absorbed because maybe you have some issues and you're taking all these nutrients and then maybe you have expensive pee because your body's not actually utilizing it because you have hurdles or blocks in the way. So there's a lot of things to consider. And then what I always say to ladies that come with me, there's such a desperation of wanting to do what they can naturally. So they're on a whole slew of vitamins. I mean, sometimes the supplement list is 2 pages, 3 pages long of a Word doc. And I'm looking through all these ingredients with them. And I'm like, wow, you have vitamin K here and vitamin K there. You have vitamin D here and vitamin D there. You've got calcium in this. Oh, you have calcium here. And there's so many, and your liver and kidneys have to manage that, have to process that, have to filter that out. And in order to manage that, your bones dissolve to release minerals as an alkalizing agent, sometimes to buffer some of this. So it really is this balancing act and not just about taking supplements, about learning what you need to do to take the supplements or finding out from someone the right protocols.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Okay. Well, this has been so informative. I've learned a lot. I'm sure that many women have learned a lot. I just love what you put out there. And I love that you're so passionate about this because you're right. And 700 mechanisms that are happening. And maybe the issues behind fatigue or osteoporosis or digestive issues have to do with a magnesium deficiency. And it would be as simple as building up the reserves of magnesium to balance everything else. So it's another piece of the puzzle, potentially.
Absolutely. It sure is. And it's something that I always make sure I check when it comes to even any woman coming in with anything. If I know magnesium's involved in that reaction, I make sure that we look at that. And we look at, you know, if we're looking at bone health, we want to look at, okay, how much calcium are you coming in with? How much vitamin D are you coming in with? And why are you still D deficient if you are supplementing it? You know, and like you said, like doctors are prescribing 50,000 IUs of vitamin D. If you are below the limit, especially since the pandemic up here, they have no hesitation in prescribing 50,000 IU in a week of vitamin D, but nothing else. And then they go and they get retested and it's moved like 5 points. And they don't understand why. And then they bump it up again. And it's just like, nobody looks to see, okay, is this actually being activated in the body? Are we actually getting vitamin D to work in the body? And most times we're not. And this is a problem.
Yeah. If I had one supplement, if I was only allowed to give someone one supplement, even if I didn't do testing to kind of fit, because I would really rather have more information for some, it would be magnesium. Mm-hmm. Number one would be magnesium for bone health. Probably number two would be vitamin K.
Right, right. And we have to also remember, I don't know if I mentioned this when we were talking about the calcium, is that excess calcium, whether it's from foods or from supplement, they're going to deplete magnesium, right? Because you don't, if you have too much calcium in the system and you have nothing to absorb, metabolize, or distribute, then calcium is going to keep decreasing magnesium because it's looking for magnesium to help it break down and to help metabolize it. But if you are dosing more and more calcium, you're kind of lowering and lowering your magnesium status. So it's definitely, like you say, a dance, and we need those, you know, 3-4 nutrients together. And most times, unless you actually have osteopenia, osteoporosis, you don't need a calcium supplement unless there is a specific reason that you do, because you do get enough from foods. If you, like, I get my patients to track it, and every single time they track it, they come back, they've got 2,000 milligrams a day coming from calcium. We don't need more than that.
Yeah. So. It's a balance. It's all about balance.
Yeah.
It really is. And learning that, that's where the key is. And that's what you're doing. You're out there sharing all this information. So I love it. I am so happy that you came and spoke with us today. I can't wait to hear the great feedback from my community when this show is released. And hopefully one day we can have more discussions on some other topics or even more magnesium topics.
I love that. I love that. Thank you so much again for having me.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for listening to Stronger Bones Lifestyle Podcast. Bone loss is not an inevitable part of aging. We don't have to just wait for it to happen. There is so much that you can do. And that is what you will learn each week on the show. Go to my website, debbierobinson.com, if you want more information about what was shared in today's episode. At the bottom of this episode in the show notes, there will be links to whatever was shared. Please subscribe to this podcast, share this podcast with your friends, your family, or any women that you think may be interested or benefit from the information we're sharing. Please rate the podcast. And if you have any questions you'd like asked or answered, I would love to hear from you. Let's do this, ladies. Let's change the way the world views osteoporosis and slow down, stop, or reverse our bone loss, take charge, and show other ladies what is possible. Thank you so much for joining me.